Professor here at University of California, Santa Cruz, executive board member of the Korea Policy Institute. That does it for our show. I'm speaking here tonight along with Daniel Ellsberg at the University of California, Santa Cruz, at the college's 9 and 10 multipurpose room at 7:30. The event will be live streamed. You can go to democracynow.org for more information. Everyone is welcome. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nadura. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Paul Huckabee. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, Native Voices from the Edge. Our guest hosts, Amory and Amber, from the Native American Youth and Family Center, are next.
KBOO hosts beloved Community in Action movie nights every third Thursday at 7 p.m. here at the radio station. On May 17th, we'll show the 2016 documentary, 13. The film explores the intersection of race, justice, and mass incarceration in the United States. It is titled after the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution.
It is on taking people from prison, putting them in community corrections, parole, and probation.
How much progress is it really if now there's a private company making money off the GPS monitor?
We now have more African Americans under criminal supervision than all the cities.
Again, that's a screening of 13 for the KBOO Beloved Community in Action movie night on Thursday, May 17th at 7 p.m. at KBOO. 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is looking for a 2018 artist in residence. The KBOO Community Radio Artists in Residence program assists artists working creatively with sound and awards 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KBOO mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. Deadline for application is June 1st at 5 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/AIR2018.
This is From the Edge.
Hey, hey, hey. Oh, oh, oh. Whoa.
We are all one people, and we have to reunite. I say, better gather up our warriors, cause tonight is the big fight. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, 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 oh. Hey, 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 hey.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:02, and you're listening to Native Voices from the Edge. Good morning. Today on Native Voices from the Edge, Amber is joining me as co-host. Amber Faced, who is Coquel, conducts intake of Oregon Native American Chamber members and works alongside the Inclusive Business Resource Network here in Portland through Prosper Portland. And what the network is, it's a citywide program that leverages the power of a partnership network committed to increasing the success of women and minority businesses. So that will be part of the topic that we'll be discussing today. Amber, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Amory. Good morning. I'm really excited to be here. We're joined. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here. I am looking forward to our talk today. We're joined by Shiloh George and Jen Maynard, two entrepreneurs here in the Portland area, Native women business owners. So
if you can just tell our listeners a little bit more about ONAC, which is the another way of saying the Oregon Native American Chambers. Could you tell us a little bit how you've started, you know, or
sure.
what the work you do is?
Yeah, so I actually came into contact with ONAC through a leadership cohort training program here in the Portland area that actually all of us were members of, the Oregon LEAD program through.
It's true.
Yeah. So I do have to give a shout out to that program and, of course, Carrie Waters, our amazing facilitator for that. So ONAC actually, I, you know, started working with them last year. We are doing work with Prosper Portland within something called the Inclusive Resource Business Network. And what this network does is really provide services and technical assistance to small businesses for communities of color and women. And we have about 11 partners that either provide technical assistance or kind of serve as cultural liaisons into that network. Mm-hmm. So, you know, ONAC and our mission, we're dedicated to working with all members of the community to advance the educational and economic opportunities for Native Americans in Oregon and Southwest Washington as well. So, you know, my work is a piece of what ONAC does, but really today I wanted to talk about some of the amazing business owners that I've been working with and really these just creative individuals in the city that are making space for themselves.
Yes, that is exciting. So that is part of what our conversation is going to be today. We have two other folks in the room with us. There's Shiloh George and Jen Mage Maynard. And let's go ahead and introduce, let's start with Jen. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today, and I'm just so grateful to be able to be on this show and that Joanne Hardesty invited us to be here, and congratulations to her on winning her primary. My name is Jen Maynard. I'm originally from Alaska. I'm Kuskokwim Dene, First Nations, and Scottish.
Great. So we'll just give a little background into some of the work you do, and we'll just talk about it and talk about how you came to found it. So Jen is founder of Longhouse Northwest, which is a year-round, she's a year-round forager in Oregon, and so has a lot of experience with wildcrafting, which we'll talk more about in a little bit. The work that she does encourages self-care, wellness, and building community holistically, and does a lot with bringing earth-based connectivity into action. Could you tell us more about that, Jen, and how this business came to fruition?
Well, you know, I've always been deeply connected with nature. I grew up in the bush in Alaska, what people now call off the grid. And we did a lot of hunting and fishing and trapping and getting to know nature. And when I moved down to Lower 48, I got to experience a lot of different topography and just fell in love with the lush richness of Oregon when I wound up here in 99. So I've been exploring the natural world here for quite a while, and it's just endless with so much bounty and getting to know the plants and the topography and the nature and first foods, and sharing that out with the rest of the world is definitely my jam. And connecting people with nature, I think, is just something that I can offer. So I enjoy doing that. Mm.
Yeah. So Jen, can you talk a little bit more about, you know, what led you to wildcrafting and really, you know, also, you know, what led you to wanting to start your business based around this incredible skill that you have?
Well, I guess it's interesting because I really didn't think of what I have been doing for so long as a commodity until I started making medicines, well, what I call medicines, tinctures, teas, and, you know, really getting to know the plants and medicinal qualities. So once I started gifting and putting that together in a way that was that others could enjoy, I was able to kind of view it in a way that I hadn't before, which was that people wanted this for their own. So I'm that's led to my small business.
Yeah.
What was the first time that you... You make a lot of products right now, and I've actually personally tried them out, and they're fantastic.
Thank you.
But what was the first time, or what was the first product you made, or when was the first time that you wildcrafted?
Well, I would say the first time that I wildcrafted was just picking flowers for snacks when I was little, you know, pineapple weed and clovers, but which I now use in my teas still all these years later. I guess I fell in love with Devil's Club and at a young age, and I just wanted to know more about it, and so I've used it for myself and for others, and I use it in one of my salves, and I guess that was my first real connection and why I one of my first connections.
So, you know, besides, you know, your wildcrafting, now you've become, you know, boss lady of your own business. And,
that's right.
You know, what I just kind of want to talk about, you know, like, you know, what are some of the values in your business that you have that maybe other wellness and cosmetic companies don't have?
Well, you know, I want to make my ancestors proud. So I keep all of my products as natural as possible and informed by nature. It's really important to me that I am low ecological impact, that I'm practicing sustainable wildcrafting, and that my packaging is all compostable or reusable. Yeah. You know, it's more expensive to purchase plant-based compostable bioplastic, but it's my intention to steward nature in every way possible. So... being humble about creating space for my customers to experience authentic self-care is definitely a part of my value set. And I try to do this by keeping my branding distinguishable but unintrusive. I don't want the focus to be on me. I want it to be able to provide self-care for the individual as experienced with the product and the intentions of the product. So I think that's pretty different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I also want to go back just to what we were talking about with the first time you wildcrafted. How did you learn this art? And was there a person to teach you, or if you could tell the listeners more about
that? You know, like I said, I grew up in the bush with my dad, so he gave me the confidence to explore nature and feel confident and safe in nature, which I think is the first step, eh? And then my grandmother, she paid her mortgage and cared for herself on her garden. And we'd go for hikes in the mountains down in the lower 48 in Tenasket, Washington. And she taught me about plants. And then when I was still a young girl, 8 or 9, my auntie died. And she had been working in Hoonah, Alaska, with the Tlingit people there, and they threw an amazing potlatch for her. And it was my first real, true spiritual experience. And during that time, one of the Tlingit elders took me out for a medicine hike and taught me about Devil's Club. And since then, you know, I just have had a deeper appreciation. I guess that was like the first deeper appreciation of plant life that I could understand on a more tangible level, and something that I could grow lifelong with as far as learning and educating myself.
Okay, so you've mentioned this a few times, but can you tell us more about what Devil's Club is?
Devil's Club is in the... it is a medicinal plant. It's something that you don't want to get caught up in because it's the most incredible briar ever. They call it Devil's Club for a reason. It's covered with really incredible spikes. But the root systems and the stems are used traditionally by Tlingit and Haida people, but it's become more popular. And people, you know, in the medicinal and foraging communities understand it pretty well. But it has a lot of really amazing healing properties, and you can use it for tea or salve and tinctures. Mm-hmm. And it helps regulate your blood sugar levels, as well as can help your bones heal if you set it in a poultice, or you know, it's good for your skin too.
Amber, do you have any other questions?
You know, Jen, I have had the opportunity to go out and, you know, be wildcrafting with you, and bring my kids along. And I know that you have been, you know, in the past working with foster youth and, you know, providing helping to establish access for those kids. Do you want to talk at all about kind of that experience and, you know, the importance of that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, working with Native foster youth was amazing. It was such a privilege. And as a foraging mentor, it was inspirational in that when, you know, when an individual gets to know Mother Nature, they will eventually understand that that experience of connectivity will provide a symbiotic relationship. Mm. And that relationship is lifelong. So giving back is a gift to ourselves, you know, as much as the receiver. And learning to steward the land comes with appreciation of nature. So going for a hike and being low impact and sustainably wildcrafting is an art, but also an act of volunteerism and love for self and our natural spaces. So, you know, sharing that with others, especially marginalized populations and Native nations, is personally motivating.
So taking that experience and background, you know, that had an intersection with starting a business. So what are some unique talents when getting your business started, or like what did that look like for you, that process?
Getting my business started has been really interesting. I've always worked for other people, but I've always been a very independent person. So I've relied quite a bit on just resources and getting and building relationships and navigating resources, I guess. So, you know, ONAC, NEA, MISO, Mercy Corps Northwest, Prosper Oregon, and Women Led have all become networks for me so that I can create this venture, which is really incredible because it's not something that I had really thought was something I could do on my own. And now with these supports, I'm doing it. So I'm really grateful.
So, you know, talking about some of the resources, do you feel like there was, you know, one in particular that really kind of ignited that spark for you and made it feel like it was possible to be an entrepreneur? You know, like it's a reality that is something that you could have.
You know, it's interesting because I guess the spark came up just right before accessing all these resources. And mm-hmm. I have to say once again, I am also very grateful for the Native American Youth and Family Association's LEAD program and Carrie Waters' work with that and bringing us all together. And here we are going into the second year of getting to know each other. And it's really powerful to have our cohort as a network. Mm-hmm. And I think that was my first start. And then from there, you know, I took a couple classes at Mercy Corps Northwest and started navigating systems, like I said, with NEA, ONAC, MISO, Prosper Oregon, and that led me to becoming a member of this mastermind group called Women Led, and we meet every week, and they, you know, we hold each other accountable and for our goals, and it's been really helpful.
Maybe for one final question before we switch over to our next guest. Maybe what is something that would have been helpful to know in the beginning or the onset of this journey with your business that you know now or that you've learned over the experience that you'd like to share?
Well, I... besides that I'm not much of an accountant, you know, just reaching out to my networks for support so that I can find other venues for filling in the gaps with things that I don't do well or don't understand yet has been invaluable, because, you know, you can't do it all, but you can do a lot. And I think that if I had known that I could navigate these systems earlier, I would have, but it just didn't seem attainable to me until I started networking with other small business owners.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you. This has been nice.
So next up on our interview panel today is Shiloh George, and I can give a little bit of an introduction, but I would also like for Shiloh to be able to introduce the work that she does here in the area. So Shiloh M. George is a Southern Cheyenne Arapaho, is her descendancy, and Scottish international speaker, and she's the owner of Lush Come Tux. Well, maybe you can talk more about just the name of your business and why you chose to name the business the name that it has.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hi, I'm my name is Shiloh, and I want to apologize if I cough a little bit. I'm kind of getting over a cold, so I'm sorry about that. So the name of my business is Lush Come Tux Tumtum. And it means a great awakening of the heart and spirit in Chinook Wawa, which is one of the trade languages from this area. And so, you know, I'm Southern Cheyenne and Arapaho, which means that I'm a guest here and, you know, was born here, but I'm still a guest. And I wanted to name my business and use that language because it's a trade language from here. So it's not particularly someone's indigenous language, because it's a combination of Chinook proper, French, English, and some other languages. And also want to honor the ancestors from here and the people that are from here, because it's been, you know, highly influential in the work that I'm doing. And also as a form of decolonization is helping people learn a phrase in Chinook Wawa and learn how to say it. And maybe then sometimes having conversations about how it might be uncomfortable to mispronounce the words, or how do you, you know, pronounce them, and kind of going through that conversation with people, I think can be an interesting opening conversation.
Mm, thank you. So can you tell us a little bit about what your business does or what you do for work?
Yeah, so I provide consulting, training, and presentation services, do a little bit of coaching. I kind of do what any kind of services that businesses and organizations really need to help further their diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so from using an Indigenous lens and being more of a holistic kind of thinker in person is kind of addressing those needs of equity and inclusion mm-hmm. in ways that are very holistic. So always starting with a racial equity lens, and then also adding in all of these other kind of equity concerns that folks have within their organizations? And how do we do that in ways that are really meaningful? How do we do that with people being having different understandings and ideas of equity and of oppression? And, you know, what are the systems that are in place in our society that are affecting marginalized folks? And how do we create ways to help lift and empower people? And there's, you know, people who are really aware of those situations, and then there are people who are not as aware. So how do we train and create opportunities for people that are kind of on a spectrum of learning?
What got you into starting this consulting work?
Well, I mean, I've been doing, I'm really excited because I feel like this is a point in my life where I'm at this kind of confluence of a lot of life experience that's both amazing and some experiences that are traumatic and hard coming together with, you know, a bachelor's and master's degree in that experience, and coming together with 20 years of social work and activism experience, and bringing all these, you know, I have some marginalized identities that I hold within myself, and being able to bring that all together and offer this kind of, I think, unique skill set to organizations and individuals. And I've been working in nonprofit work for about 20 years, and I think it's really important to do nonprofit work. I think it is an area, you know, that we really need to keep in our society. However, kind of like what Jen was talking about, I'm a little bit of an independent person. I'm kind of an individual thinker. I'm interested in pushing the boundaries of how we relate to one another. And I think that in a lot of our institutions, even if they're, you know, nonprofits, or even if they're culturally specific nonprofits, there's still a lot of struggle with how to relate to one another, how to be curious about each other, how to be have healthy boundaries and relationships with each other. And then kind of that process of foundations and people giving money to nonprofits and really having a lot of expectations for what that money is gonna, how you're going to, they're gonna give you this money, but you're gonna do A, B, and C to get it. Mm-hmm. And so I think after so many years, I'm kind of tired of that restriction. And as someone who's, you know, working culturally specific, I don't really want to be tied down to someone else's expectations of what, how you're going to get something accomplished, right? Or what culture is, especially if it's, you know, white dominated, you know, foundations and stuff. So I like the idea of being independent. I like the idea of coming into an organization and they know right from the start, like, I'm a fat person, I'm, you know, and mixed race indigenous woman, you know, I'm queer and two-spirit, and I have a very specific lens. They've hired me for that. They understand I'm coming in with that, and hopefully they're ready for the conversations that we're going to have, and let's just go for it. And so I think that that's kind of hard to do when you're hired in an organization and working for them. So I like being my own boss and having those boundaries of like who I want to work with and who I don't, and where people are at, and being able to be very creative and expansive in how I do things. I don't like to be micromanaged. So, yeah.
Who does?
That's true. That's true. But I think being your own, like being an entrepreneur, like there's, you know, the whole thing of like, if you screw up, then it's your, you know, it's your fault. Or you have all this responsibility, but you also have this expansiveness, mm-hmm. that, you know, it's just amazing, but it's kind of terrifying as well as exhilarating. That's how I experience it anyway.
Yeah. I always say that becoming an entrepreneur is like one of the more radical things you can do, mm-hmm. you know, becoming your own boss and making your own rules and putting your own values, you know, into this business that ultimately you're responsible for. Yeah. So
yeah, it's wild.
And I think it speaks to our community, too, that we carve our own way and mm-hmm. are creative in that as well. And just hearing both of your experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Jen and I definitely have some similarities. And like when Jen was talking about, you know, kind of branding and not wanting it to make it so much about you. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when your, I quote, product is you and your services, that can be a little bit tricky. And you know, going through some of the more traditional kind of business model ideas, it's a little bit like I found it to be difficult, and Jenna's shaking her head, yes, to keep our traditional like indigenous values and our personal values in a system that really is made to like crush that and not,
yeah,
and not be accepting of it. And that's like the whole kind of point of doing diversity and equity work, is also doing that in your actual business and how you promote your business and how you walk through your life. That's how I see it anyways. Mm-hmm. So if that can be really challenging in these sort of like systems of oppression.
And how do you do that?
I think that there's a lot of self-reflection, mm-hmm. Constantly critiquing myself, being in community with like wonderful people like you all. And I have a really close friend, Brianna, who has helped me every step of the way, and I'm hoping she'll continue to help me out. She's creating her own nonprofit right now as well. And, you know, just having people that you can bounce ideas off of, and having people you can trust who are like, hey, you know, this is kind of, you know, worrying me, or did you think about this? And just being accountable to other people, like, you know, Jen has her groups that she's accountable to. And one of the things I was thinking about this analogy, when I was in graduate school, I had a really difficult time, and I, you know, people were kind of like, oh, you know, you're really smart and you have these really awesome ideas, and, you know, you could like get a PhD and teach in, you know, the university and all of this. And I kind of was like, oh yeah. And I just kind of like filled my head with these sort of like, kind of individualistic personal kind of ideas, and maybe lost a little bit some of my way and humbleness. And it was excruciatingly painful to go through that process of kind of losing my way. And so after graduate school, I've kind of done a healing process and come back to this road and this path. And I feel very connected to my ancestors, and that they're giving me a lot of help and guidance on this path. And I also keep reminding myself to not drink the Kool-Aid of the colonizer. Like, I feel like I did that in grad school, and I kind of fell down that hole, and that might be fine for other people and other people's paths, but that's not the path for me. So when I'm doing this work and working with organizations that are sort of just like bathed in like white supremacy and colonization, it's sort of like you can drink a little bit of that Kool-Aid to see what you're dealing with, but do not get drunk off of it. Like, do not, like, you know, make that part of who you are. So that's kind of what I'm constantly reminding myself of, is be humble, be curious, be helpful and loving, you know, and don't drink the Kool-Aid.
So. Love that. Well, we talked earlier this week in preparation for this conversation, mm-hmm. and something that you had said was the work that you do is a gift. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that means to you?
This is absolutely, like I was kind of saying before, it just seems like a lot of, I mean, I'm a person who's had a lot of help throughout my life and beautiful people in my life. I've also had some very tragic and hard things happen as well. And, you know, have had many years of just struggling, like, who am I and how do I walk through this world in a way that I can respect who I am and love who I am, even though I'm getting lots of messages, like as a fat person or a mixed race indigenous person or a queer person, about not having the right kind of body, not living the right kind of lifestyle, not loving the right kind of people, not showing up in the world the right way. And how do I, you know, how do I walk through and still love myself or still respect myself? Sometimes it's hard to love yourself, but try to find that self-respect. And so it's a gift to be able to take all of those experiences and all of that healing work and to continue to be a lifelong learner and to be able to help other people with it. It's, I don't know, I don't think I've ever felt this kind of grounding and freedom and excitement since maybe I was a little girl. You know, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if I'm connecting back with who I was when I first came here in this life. And that feels really amazing. And it's not perfect, and it's not a feeling that's going to be there forever, right? Because our emotions are always changing. But it's just, I don't know, I just kind of for the last couple of weeks have been sitting in this beautiful space of being able to look around me at all the beautiful people in my life and the amazing conversations I'm having with sometimes large, you know, government organizations in this area where people, you know, inside the institutions are being like, yeah, we see there's a lot of problems here and we're not really sure what to do. And then having those amazing conversations where people are really ready and being able to tell them, you know, yeah, you're struggling with, you know, how your agency is interacting with the community and with marginalized communities, and maybe marginalized communities are not interacting with you the way that you would like or whatever, but that's part of the difficulty of this work mm-hmm. and the beauty of this work. And that's just the way it is. And so being able to be someone who can help individuals and institutions kind of keep walking through that. Like, you can't give up. You can't stop. Like, we have to keep going. It's going to be messy. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult for generations, and we can't stop. You have to keep going. Where's that resiliency? And just kind of helping people get through that, which also I think helps me get through it as well. It's kind of this reciprocity that's really beautiful. Mm.
You're really beautiful.
Thank you. You're all beautiful.
I love that. And, you know, like, your business really kind of falls on this spectrum of, like, social justice.
Yeah.
You know, the work that you do, yes, you know, you are a business, but you're really doing a lot of work for your community, communities. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really special how you bring all of that together and, you know, all of your identities intersect. And so any of the work that you do, really, they're receiving, you know, all of these different, you know, perspectives and, you know, any people that are willing to work with you are receiving a gift mm-hmm. From you and from your ancestors and also from the communities that have brought you here. So
it's very much a spiritual process, whether people want to admit that or not, or whether they're comfortable with that or not, or whether they're, you know, part of, I mean, I have my own particular way of viewing the world and walking through it spiritually. And I think it's like, that's what's moving me forward. And that's what my ancestors want me to do. And that's why, you know, I've like legit been in business for what, 6 months? and I'm working with some really interesting organizations and, you know, having great conversations. And I didn't think I would be at this place at 6 months. It's really exciting. And I still also kind of struggle with, well, maybe these are just one-offs. You know, maybe it's just going to be 6 months of excitement and then no one else is going to be interested, you know? And I hope that that's not the case. Even if it is, like, it's been amazing. And I've met a lot of fantastic people. But yeah, it's very much a spiritual experience and my life work. Like, this is what mm-hmm. I'm, like, born to do. So being able to have the flexibility and freedom to do that in the way that my ancestors want is amazing, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, and you kind of talked about, you know, like, we've been kind of dancing around this a little bit, but you talked about working in the nonprofit world mm-hmm. for so long
yeah.
and also, like, having the flexibility to be able to start this business and that you've only been in business for 6 months. So do you want to talk a little bit about, like, kind of what what your day or what your kind of life looks like right now? Mm-hmm. I know you know, you've got a lot of things going on with your business, but you also, you know, have a full-time job, right?
I do. So the other thing that kind of is important to talk about, because I have other friends who are doing similar work to me, and, you know, they're like, well, I'm not, you know, kind of meeting with these people and doing this, but the thing is that the presentations that I give, speaking at conferences and things like that, I've been doing for like 5 years, pretty much free. Occasionally I would get paid for it, but was more about getting the experience, expressing my ideas, practicing over and over and over, getting feedback from people so that I was kind of ready for this. So I've done a lot of kind of back work in the background. And so, yeah, I work full time at NAIA as a parent advocate. I've been there for 2.5, well, I think just over 2 years. And I love working with the families I work with. I love our Native community so much. And it's the community has given me so much personally, and it's wonderful to give that back. And also on top of that full-time job, you know, is going out and meeting with potential you know, organizations that want to work with you, and having discovery meetings where you talk for an hour, hour and a half, figure out what they're kind of needing. And then you have to, you know, figure out. One of the struggles that I've had is that because of the things I do are so holistic, when I kind of look at how do I talk about my business and structure my business, there's all these models that are very individualistic and like very linear. Like, you do this kind of service and niche, niche, niche. And I get that. And that's not really me. Like, I come with, I guess, a kind of bouquet of services, and you can kind of choose, we can choose together what's going to work the best for you. So that's been some of the challenges. How do I explain that to people? And then, so it's figuring all of that out. It's meeting with a lot of professional service providers, because I do not know how to do accounting. I do not know how to do like business taxes. I don't know about legal stuff and contracts. I'm business insurance. Like, it just goes on and on and on. And since I've been in the nonprofit world for so many years, I know zero about running a business. So when I, you know, kind of got a hold of Amber and was like, I'm ready to take this leap and this step, and I'm totally terrified, but I, you know, am a lifelong learner and I'm curious, so I need some help. And she was like, let's get you into the Thai Excel boot camp. So because of Prosper Portland, I got a scholarship to go to that. And that was eye-opening for me. And I met a lot of people who were doing very kind of different work than I was doing, but still mostly supporting the community in some way, but kind of got my foot into like what the business world might be like. And some of it I was like, ew, no, like this is not, these parts are not for me. But I also learned a lot of really great things and had access to, you know, lawyers coming in and speaking about, you know, what is the difference between a contract worker and an employee, and don't get it mixed up or you could get in a lot of trouble. And, you know, just kind of having those amazing conversations, like Jen said, makes it more real. And being around entrepreneurs and business owners who are doing a variety of things makes it more possible. And I think that if you, and this is something that I learned in higher education, being a first generation college student, if you want to achieve something that you don't really understand or have experience with, you should probably surround yourself with people who are currently doing that or have done it. And it makes it more realistic for you to be able to attain and to figure it out. But I mean, I don't think that I would have been able to do this without all the professional supports, without having Amber and Prosper Portland. Like, I joke about Prosper Portland being my like business sugar daddy, because like literally Prosper Portland has paid for so many trainings and services in the last 6 to 7 months. And I'm eternally grateful to them and to ONAC, because I don't know that I could have done this. And it's just so exciting to like be living my dream. Like, this is like, I, you know, Amber, I often will call or text Amber and be like, I'm living my dream, and I just want to cry because it feels so good. And yeah, so it's a lot of planning and constantly, you know, building a website. And, you know, I don't know a lot about marketing, but I love art. And then I get stuck in the creative process where I have like 3 or 4 different color themes for my business. Like, it's just kind of, I can't stop. It's just so exciting. So, and then there's like actually doing the work, and then there's like conferences to speak at, and then people sometimes ask me to do land acknowledgments. And I mean, this week there was a march for supporting Palestine that, you know, somebody asked me to come and, you know, speak at the beginning of that, which is lovely. And so you just kind of end up doing all these different things and saying yes to being on podcasts and all of that. And then it just kind of adds up and you're like working 60-hour weeks. But yeah. I think it's totally worth it. It's totally worth it. But then, you know, you come to, you know, someone like Jen and you're like, I need to take care of myself and, you know, all of that. And so I think that like Jen and I are doing very similar work, whereas Jen's working a lot with like sort of plants and physicalness and wellness. And I'm helping people a lot with a sort of like mental health and thinking. And I think that our work kind of coincides really well together. And I've been foraging with Jen, and it's fun.
Yes, it is fun. Thank you. And solidarity.
Yeah. Yes.
Great. Well, if you haven't been listening for the hour, we've been talking about, been here with Amber Face from the Oregon Native American Chamber, and we are talking about owning businesses as a Native woman in the Portland metro area. And so one thing that we've been talking about, we've been bringing up throughout this, are the resources that it takes to start a business and how ONAC works with Prosper Portland. So we have someone here today from Prosper Portland as well who would be, who's able to join us last minute. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Amanda Park. I work at Prosper Portland. It's so great to hear the stories about how folks are able to access different resources and get their businesses started. That's exactly what the program's for. I think as far as business resources, the program that I'm managing is the Inclusive Business Resource Network alongside two of my colleagues. And we bring together 11 different nonprofit organizations that work throughout the city in different capacities. Some are very culturally specific or community specific organizations. Others are really based in supporting microenterprise or helping folks scale up a business. So we're able to work with folks from I just have an idea to I'm really ready to take my business national or international.
How does someone find Prosper Portland, or how are these folks who are already reaching out to you, reaching out,
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's something the program's in its first, we're just closing the first year. And that's something that we are trying to determine the best way to help get the word out. So for the organizations that we're working with, the program's meant to be a no wrong door approach. So any of the organizations in the network you could go into, and they help you find, what resources you're going to need in that moment and help you navigate the different pathways a business might take. But you can also go to Prosper Portland's website, and it's prosperportland.com/biznetwork.
Okay.
Also, one of the programs under in the Inclusive Business Resource Network is Mercatus. And Mercatus is a storytelling platform and directory for entrepreneurs of color. And it's a great resource if you're out there and you're thinking of starting a business or you have a business, to go online, check it out, get signed up for the newsletter. And a lot of different resources and community events are shared there.
It was called Mercatus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do people find that?
It's mercatuspdx.com.
Okay. And that is part of Prosper Portland.
Yeah. It's part of the Inclusive Business Resource Network.
Cool.
Yeah. And Jen actually was vending at their very first, Mercatus's very first My People's Market.
Best party I've ever been to in Portland.
It was literally, you kind of walked into the space and you're like, wow, is this Portland? Like,
so vibrant.
Welcome to Portland.
Yeah, that's
true.
There's another one upcoming.
Yeah. So thank you, Amber. We have My People's Market coming up June 30th from 12 to 8 in the Rose Quarter Commons, and it's right between the Moda Center and the Veteran Memorial Coliseum, sort of outside in the Esplanade there. We have over 100 vendors ready to go, two stages, music going the whole time, music, performers, artists. Should be a lot of fun.
If someone's listening and wants to vend, is that still open, or is it past the time?
We have closed applications for the June market, but we'll reopen applications for the November market probably in July or August. So I would say if you're interested in being a vendor, to go to mercatuspdx.com and sign up for the newsletter.
Great. So, Amber, if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit more about... So, the Oregon Native American Chamber is one of the organizations that works with Prosper Portland in this alliance of organizations that you were just speaking about, Amanda, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Are there other culturally specific organizations that people can get connected to that are involved?
Absolutely, yeah. So ONAC is a cultural liaison for the Portland Native American community. And you know, we also have partners that are from Apano and ERCO. The Hispanic Chamber is a member as well. And so we all get together monthly and we, you know, we talk to each other. You know, we talk about what's going on, what resources are available for entrepreneurs right now, what businesses we're working with. We also have partners in this network that are, you know, service providers for direct service. So the Micro Enterprise Services of Oregon, MISO, NAYA, the Native American Youth and Family Center, which we've been talking about a lot, the Portland Incubator Experiment, PIE, and TIE Oregon, which we also talked about. Shiloh did their amazing boot camp program. And then also the PSU Business Outreach Program, which provides direct service, and Accelerate Fund, which is it's run by women and it builds equity and entrepreneurship by providing education and peer support. So yeah, we're quite the group, and Prosper Portland has really been working hard to bring us all together into a cohesive unit, and I think we've done some of that through equity training together and relationship building and community building in a lot of ways, and all with the goal of like raising wealth within our communities of color, you know, economic development for women and entrepreneurs of color in the Portland area.
So these are all resources that folks can get tapped into in the community as we are, you know, I think another final takeaway I'd love to ask the room or anyone who's here. Just, do you have any final takeaways for anyone listening who might be interested in entrepreneurship? Or last thoughts too?
I think there's, like has been mentioned, there are so many resources. I had no idea, like from, you know, being able to get legal services for $25 per matter. So I was able to get contracts drawn up by a lawyer for $25, which is like unheard of. And then getting help with setting up QuickBooks and accounting is something I'm doing through BOP right now. And I'm one of those people that's like, even though I'm busy, I'm like, I'll do it. I'll do that. You know? Cause I think that, you know, there's just so much, like I've just needed so much to learn, and I want to do it the right way. And I want to make sure I set myself up for success. So I think that if you are, have this great idea or this is your dream, I think you should, you know, contact one of the organizations and check it out. And even though it's terrifying, the more you learn about what you're doing, the like, easier it'll be, and more like less terror, more excitement is kind of how I've noticed that it goes.
Yeah. And Shiloh, even though you know you are saying that you always say yes, you say yes and you do it and you follow through, and that's one thing, you know, like I think that speaks a lot to your success now, is that you're just, you know, like blazing your trail and making your way. And I'm so happy and honored that I've been able to work with you even a little bit, because you're just such an incredible woman and entrepreneur, and thanks for taking advantage of all of these amazing resources.
Yeah, I say go out and do it. We need as many people as possible, and definitely women and people of color, to be in our communities and have our voices heard and have our products and services available. It's incredibly important, and I appreciate the different organizations in this town who see that and want it and are putting their money where their mouth is. I think it's really important.
I completely agree. You know, there are just so many opportunities for people to be able to kind of create something that maybe seems outlandish or doesn't really fit into the typical landscape. But if you have a dream and a passion and you have the drive to make it come to fruition, there are so many resources here in Portland for you. And that's what we need to be doing in order to create a better society, is just to come together with our amazing ideas and create something new.
I loved when you talked about it being radical, and that we're talking about such a life-changing, risky opportunity too.
and that we're supporting other people to do it.
I want to see, like, the business landscape really continue to change and new business models that are inclusive to all different types of people and that are based less on, like, white supremacy and more on engaging our communities and more about healing, you know, difficulties that we've had in our community and really empowering and uplifting folks who have amazing voices and skills that maybe a lot of times we don't see or notice because there's just so much kind of voice from the sort of typical traditional places of our society. So yeah, I'm ready for the radical shift to continue to happen. So get out there and do this awesome work.
Yeah. I mean, Native Americans, you know, we are a small population and we do account for the smallest percentage of business ownership. So it is really important, you know, that we share our gifts and our stories and, you know, share our culture. You know, I think that we've hidden up for a long time because of fear and, you know, being able to come out into the spotlight takes a lot of power and a lot of strength. And, you know, I just appreciate you both coming onto the show today and talking about your journeys because you both have such amazing businesses and amazing stories and really, you know, you're making a path for other entrepreneurs as well. So
thank you.
So true.
Thank you.
Well, let's go over some other ways outside of support local businesses, ways that we can get involved. So a few things that are coming up in, I think it's this Saturday, at OSU is in Corvallis is a powwow at McAlexander Fieldhouse. Grand entries are at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. There's also a Native Makers and Creatives panel.
Yeah, sure. So in July 19th, we're going to be co-sponsoring an event with NAIA and the athletic and outdoor industry about Native makers and creators here in the Portland area. Details are still being finalized, but stay tuned.
Okay. Where can people look to get more information about that? The ONAC?
Yeah, you know, we'll have it up on ONAC pretty soon. And then also coming up on June 1st is Tattoo 34 on Hawthorne's First Friday Art Show. They are a Native-owned and operated tattoo parlor on Hawthorne. And every First Friday they, you know, have an art party, basically. Usually they have music and art and drinks available. So
nice.
It's another Native-owned business.
Another place to get, if you are looking to do some local business shopping, would be the Delta Park Powwow. That is something that happens on an annual basis here in Portland. Any other events?
And the Delta Park Powwow is during Father's Day weekend as well.
So I hold a couple of events, and every second Sunday at Trist, which is a woman of color owned business down in Ankeny Alley, I hold an event called the Mystery Trunk Sale, talking about building a new economy and lifting each other up. Vendors can vend for free. It's first come, first table. And it's a really good time. It's fun to see what people are creating and to just build community together. So it's every second Sunday of the month. And I'm also starting an event that's it's earlier in the day, and it's a women's event. So anybody who identifies as a woman, it's a safe place to come. And our first event is called Radical Pleasurist. And the event itself is called Femme Vitale. So I'm really excited about it. I'm excited about bringing women together and just having a safe place to explore all kinds of things. So those events happen on a monthly basis.
Great. Thank you. Well, that takes up the time of our show today. Thank you all for being here and for sharing your wisdom and experience. Our sound engineer was John today. Thank you, John.
And that'll be it for Native Voices from the Edge today. Have a great day.
Good morning, it's 8:59. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up, Press Watch at 9 o'clock in just a couple of minutes. Teresa Mitchell's weekly news and commentary program, digging deep into the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 at Fight the Empire, Per Fogarang asks, what happened to Sergei Skripal and his daughter, Yulia? At 10, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary flashpoints at 10:15 with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, Mark Nepo talks about his work as a thought leader and his new book, Things That Join the Sea and Sky. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support. Keep informed, get involved by going to kboo.fm. Click donate to become a member. It's 9 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Nat Turner Project book release on Thursday, May 24th at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall in Portland. The Nat Turner Project allows artists of color to go beyond the usual initial expositions inherent in presenting art born of marginalized perspectives to a dominant culture, and creates an environment of inclusivity, a communal harbor for artists previously silenced by institutional constraints, and actively provides priority spaces to artists of color. Their first catalog, titled Nat Turner Project Testimony, will be released and celebrated with food, drink, and music. Again, that's the Nat Turner Project book release on Thursday, May 24th at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.